It's weird that my life has just felt easier.
Yeah.
Which is mad. And one interesting thing that I didn't think would happen was that I've enjoyed parties more.
Welcome to Series 2 of the 1 Year No Beer Podcast.
If you haven't hit subscribe yet, then hit that button so you don't miss another episode.
Welcome to another episode of the 1 Year No Beer Podcast. Today, I am joined by no other than Paul Mort, who is a 2 times UK Master Coach of the Year. You need to tell me about that.
Yeah.
Best-selling Audible author. Can't wait to hear about that. And keynote speaker. In 2014, after moving to Marbella and building a successful business, Paul became suicidal. Since then, he has transformed his life, and through his personal experiences, results, book, videos, world-class coaching, and keynote speaking, has inspired thousands of men to do the same and get their shit together for their business and families. Little side note here. There will be more swearing. If you are sensitive and not used to swearing on this podcast, then now the time is to
anybody that's on 1 year no beer is used to swearing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's definitely some swearing.
Do you know what I love about what you just did there? When I do a podcast sometimes and they say, oh, just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. And I'm thinking, I'm sure that's your fucking job.
Have you done any research here?
I'm like, really? Because it's a long story, that, right?
Yeah.
And obviously we wrote that and shrunk it down.
Yeah.
Because no one kind of, you don't want it to turn into, well, I left school and this.
That's
and
right.
Then next thing you know, you're 3 hours late and no one's learned anything except about what GCSEs you got.
Yep.
But by the way, one of mine was Spanish.
Well done.
One of me too.
That's
why. You might have seen
Is that funny? I've been there 2 years and that's about all I can
really?
Say.
Really?
Yeah, it's shocking. It's shocking.
Well, do you know what happened to me, mate? Well, it's mad. When I went to Spain, I hadn't spoken any Spanish since I passed GCSE, and I'm sure I passed Spanish and French, and I'm sure I only passed those two because it was an oral exam. I'm not saying I'm amazing at talking.
Yeah,
but I am. But I hadn't spoken any Spanish, and then I moved to Marbella, and then I remember being drunk one night, which is a regular occurrence there.
Yeah.
And the taxi driver, I was like, where are you going? And no shit, I was so pissed, and I'd only just moved there that I couldn't remember. But I said, this is mad, I said, Plaza de Toro, Estepona. You know what that means?
The
bull ring.
The bull.
I can't remember learning that. And then I was like, oh, well. And then I started just remembering random bits of Spanish. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sick. So thank you for that intro, mate.
No problem. And learning Spanish has been an absolute challenge for me. Absolutely. There are many challenges up there. But I have spent the last few hours, couple of days, in fact, driving up here to Newcastle from Mallorca.
Amazing.
And I've had quite a lot of time with you. Listening to some of the podcasts and stuff like that.
Jesus.
So it's been very enjoyable.
You're like that poor kid Connor that's not here today that works for me, who has to edit every podcast, clean, tidy up every video, edit everything.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're not sick of my voice? And he's like, you kind of, after a while, you must become numb to it.
No, it's good. It's very, you're up to amazing things. You've got an amazing story.
Thank you, man.
And you're up to really good stuff. You know, the thing is, I'm similar to you. I'm very passionate about men, supporting men in particular, you know, and alcohol and is so prevalent in society.
No one wants to talk about it, is what I find, mate.
And I think that if you are ahead in the game a bit and you've, you know, done a bit of work on yourself and you've expressed emotions, I think we have a right, you know, a duty.
I was just going to say, I feel like I have a duty to tell people about it. And sometimes when I've been, particularly when I'm talking about this non-alcohol thing, I'm like, I keep prefacing it with, I don't want to sound like a fucking vegan CrossFitter.
Yeah, I heard
which
that
is
many
not
times.
Spanish. It's not Spanish for annoying.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's a really interesting thing that when I'm talking about it, I always preface it with that.
Yeah.
So and I say that about a lot of things. But it's
So the vegan CrossFitter in your mind is A, vegan, so they never stop talking about it, and B, CrossFitter, therefore they never stop talking about it.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so it's the double whammy.
And you know what's weird? I'd love to actually, it's an interesting thing, because I've actually got a lot of respect for both, for that. Because I'm like, part of his wishes I had the discipline to be vegan, but I also love meat. Part of his wishes that I had the discipline and the enthusiasm to do CrossFit. It's an interesting thing, and that's one of the most powerful things I've learned on my journey is that everything that I do now, at some point in my life, I've taken the piss out of.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Like, it's some fucking 1 year no beer. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then you'd be like, meditation. What's the, what?
Yep.
Journaling. What, are you 16-year-old female? Are you a 16-year-old school? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Same with jujitsu, same with ice baths. What do you want to do that for, you fucking idiot?
Yeah.
It's a strange thing, that, isn't it?
It is. So, it's difficult not to cross that line of evangelical and everything else, meanwhile being so passionate about it. Because like you said, right, I mean, meditation is a big part of your journey. And recovery from bipolar disorder and being in severe meds and things like that. Yeah. And so knowing what most people are told, which is, oh, you need to take these pills. You probably need to take them for the rest of your life. You know, this is the way you're going to be.
Yeah.
To discovering something that changes your life so significantly, how do you not tell everyone?
it's such a mad thing, you know, because at the start I was very wary of that. But then I think what happened was, and this is where I think I'm still at and why it resonates with a lot of people, I'm not just talking about it.
Yeah.
People, and this is why I love it when, I mean, me and you have been in conversation for randomly at quite random times in my lives, haven't we?
Yeah,
how long
yeah.
would you say?
I don't know, quite a few years.
Before I decided to do 1 year no beer.
Exactly, yeah. yeah.
So I'm kind of, I think what people get is now that, and I remember this year I went to Rome to do a jiu-jitsu camp with one of my clients that's working in my program with me for maybe 3 years, right, Mike. And he's into jiu-jitsu. We went there, went to the Roma match and that. And on the plane, he said, Paul, you fucking, like, I've never spent that much time. We've been to my office, we've done like a half day consult, done a lot of Zooming together, as you do. And he's like, Paul, you actually live this shit? He was like, he said, I had a conversation with your wife about, I wonder what, if he's like, when I'm living, I lived with him for a week.
Mm.
He said, I wonder what he's like. I wonder whether that's just a Zoom thing or a show thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, you actually live this shit? And then, funnily enough, he started being more adherent to what I was teaching. Does that make sense?
Oh, completely.
So, and I think that's the big difference between where we're at is that we're living it.
Yeah, well, you've got it up. And I actually came in upstairs first. I went into the wrong room.
There was ceiling.
Hear you on a call up there. I just heard expletive, expletive, expletive. So I was thinking that poor person who's being coached there. but up on the wall,
did you
it
come
says,
in on the bit where I was talking about anal sex?
We're going to come on to something about anal later.
Oh, really?
But the...
do I have to wait?
No,
you're not coming
weird.
In.
That sounded weird.
You've just created the best open loop. Oh, sorry, open hoop.
open loop, hoop, open hoop.
That I've ever heard of.
Yeah, no, I'm going to leave that as a suspense.
All right, amazing, just... amazing, amazing.
But you've got it up on the wall up there, lead by example. I'd love that to be my middle name. I'd like it's just, and the truth is, I'm not 100% congruent all the time. Sometimes the meditation doesn't happen. Sometimes these things don't happen. But that is the way I am. I'm like this. But in general, I want the experience the same as you have of somebody to come and see your life and be like, oh,
how
no,
have
you're
you done
living
that?
This.
Yeah. How have you done that?
Yeah.
And I think that the lead by example thing's interesting because I actually, you think about leading by example, I'm honest about it as well. Like, I'm honest that I am an example of, if I fuck up, I'm going to say I fucked up and I'm going to learn from it. So I think that's an example as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's always a real interesting thing. And people ask me, well, you'll get it all the time. How do I help support someone?
Yeah.
How do I help a family member? How do I help this? I'm like, you kind of, this is a horrible thing to say, but I learned it from one of my coaches, Peter. He said, you've got no right to help anybody. He said, because help is an invitation. Mm-hmm. So not everyone's going to take the invitation, but the best invitation you could possibly extend is the invitation of example. And I love Amazing. This. Have you heard the Amazing. Lighthouse and tugboat analogy? Yeah,
okay, go.
I love that analogy. Yeah. So it's like the difference between, so a tugboat goes out and tries to rescue everybody and drag them into shore with them. And the tugboats, you never notice the tugboats always fucked. Like it's always rusty and it's always got like black steam coming out of the top of it and that. Whereas a lighthouse just shines there, shining its light, like come here if you want to come here.
Yeah.
Or avoid these rocks, or just, if you want to join me, join me. But if you don't, I'm not going to come and try and rescue you. And I definitely fell into that trap at some point in my coaching career where I take it personally if people didn't follow along and do what I said.
I mean, this is so key in alcohol. And we're jumping all over the place, as we would do. Bipolar and ADHD.
I'm like, you brought loads of questions and I haven't even done any yet.
No, that's the best way. The best way. But, what I was going to say is, you know, with people with their relationship with alcohol, and we see this so much, you know, one individual wants to change as part of a couple of relationship and they get a week or 2 weeks down the line and they're like, right, come on, are you going to do it too? And it's like, whoa, 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 right? You know, your concept of changing your relationship with alcohol started 3 years ago, right? When you were thinking that hangover is enough for me, and you went through this whole cycle
to
finally get to this point here where you're taking a break, and now you're expecting your partner to do it after 2 weeks.
That's really interesting. I've never heard that before.
No.
I've never even thought about that before.
So lead by example, be the lighthouse, do it for 6 months, a year, right? And then once you've sorted your shit out first, got yourself into a really good spot, then be like, hey, do you need to, are you interested in coming along with me? But don't do any judgment.
Because part of them is going to be like, why the fuck would I listen to you?
Yeah, exactly.
I see it with guys all the time. Guys learn meditation. Guys get on the booze-free thing. Guys do certain things. And then they start expecting, it's almost like we expect everyone else to join in. And I'm like, mate, the problem is your wife's heard you say this for 15 years that you're going to stop doing this and you're going to start doing that, and this time's different. And that I get it with guys, I just want my wife to support me on the course. I'm like, well, stop talking about it and start fucking being about it then.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, completely.
Stop talking about it and start being about it. I remember this year I've had a hard on for this guy, Dr. Joe Dispenza, this year.
Amazing.
Done a lot of work with him, did the 7-day advanced retreat, which blew me head off.
Right.
And he says something like, the moment you know change is happening is when you stop talking about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's so simple, but it's kind of profound, because this happened for me is kind of when I stopped preaching and started just doing it. Suddenly people started paying more attention.
Even now,
I still get poor. So I haven't dropped any. People talk about dropping your peer groups and that, right? And getting rid of your friends and that. I'm like, I don't see the need to do that unless you're trying to convince them to do the same.
Yeah.
My mate's still doing that weird meditation shit. I am John Link. You know, I still get asked that all the time.
Exactly.
And it's the whole peer pressure thing, which I hope O'Connor is a real interesting thing, because I never, because I'm so honest about it, no one ever says, are you sure you don't want to drink? And I think that's one of the keys is like, because I've said, I'm not going to drink this year because it makes us feel like this and because I've got this going on. From the outset, no one's ever tried to peer pressure us.
Yeah. Well,
because I'm not trying to do it in private either.
So let's get into a bit of your story, because I think there's some steps before the year.
Oh, big
one. We didn't go from Marbella to doing a year off booze.
Yeah.
And lots of One Year No Beer members do. But there was a more of a gradual change or change for you. But so let's go back to, tell me a bit of background about Marbella and where you were at.
So 2010, I started, so I've been self-employed since I was 1999. 2010 was the point in my life where I started to actually build something. 1980, I was born, yeah.
What day?
27th of September.
Okay.
Here's 13th
of December, 1980. Here's a bit older than me.
Is it? So here's a mad story about the 27th of September. For about 30 years of my life, I told everybody my birthday was on the same day as Hulk Hogan's. I found out last year that it wasn't.
Oh!
His birthday's in fucking August.
Is it?
And I was like, it must be someone. The only famous person's birthday on 20 was fucking Gwyneth Paltrow. So all of my clients for my birthday sent us Hulk Hogan. I got about 30 Hulk Hogan birthday cards. Someone even sent us a life-size Hulk Hogan.
Amazing.
Like a cardboard cutout. Anyways.
But I just say, never let the truth get in the way of a lie. How many people are actually going to Google?
The lie wasn't even useful. It wasn't even a useful lie. Anyway, so from 19 till... So 2010, before my son was born, I started actually making some money, and no one in my family was successful.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't losers and jobless. They weren't on the my dad worked in the same factory for 35 years. My mom worked in Asda for 15 years, right? Mm. Like my sister.
You're from here,
from South Shields.
Yeah.
And it's not an affluent town at all, not even close. And in 2010, I started seeing success, and I kind of didn't know how to deal with it. Mm. I started getting criticism. I was like, no one talks shit about me until I started making something myself.
Yeah.
I had this
money.
What
were you doing?
Personal training. So I was running these outdoor boot camps, and mate, we're doing good money. Like, I started doing $8,000 a month, $9,000 a month, $10,000 a month, all cash.
Mm.
The fuck do you do with this? I never been taught anything about money. Never even been taught, like, this was all on pure hustle. No help, no support, no grants, no family member to turn to and say, how do I do this? This is just all hustle and fucking Tony Robbins box sets. Do you know what I mean? This is all I need is within me now. Yes, all that, right?
Within me.
You know
now.
That one?
Oh, yeah. Massive Tony.
So it was all hustle. It was all that kind of shit, cutting all the people out. And anyway, I just didn't know what to do with it. So I was like, I didn't have my first line of coke until I was 20 or something. So that wasn't really a thing.
Interesting.
And then I was just like, right, I've got all this money. What do you do with it? Well, you buy a nice car, you party hard, you do loads of drugs and that. And then I got into this point, mate, where part of the problem with personal development. I was like, oh, well, what you need to do is cut all of the negative people out of your life. So I did.
Mm-hmm.
And moved to Marbella because there was no one. And I only realized this in the last few years where I'm like, actually, everyone likes to complain. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone likes to complain. So, and again, one thing I talk about in my live show is if I think you're negative, what does that make me? It means I'm negative, right?
Right.
So I cut all of the people out. I removed all the toxic people like you're supposed to. And I moved to Marbella where there was just me. Didn't know anyone there.
Yep.
Me, a newborn son, and my wife, who 6 months later was pregnant. And in Marbella, because I didn't know anyone, I just became isolated.
Yeah.
Didn't know
loneliness
anyone.
Loneliness through the roof.
Nah, loneliness through the roof. I met a couple of people. One of them happened to be a drug dealer. So actually the drinking and the sniffing, which I didn't think was a problem when I was at home.
Yeah.
Because I was around people that were doing the same. It got worse because I was lonely.
Mm.
So I wasn't even going out and doing it anymore. I was doing it sitting around the pool. Do you know what I mean? It was just, and it became more of a problem. So when I was there, also the problem, and I don't know whether you had this when you first moved abroad, was that suddenly everyone was your best mate and they wanted to come and visit you. Oh, well, that's fine. I lived 2 streets away from you when I was in South Shields.
Yeah.
I didn't see much of you then, mate. Anyway, so that became, the way I describe it was like a 2-year lad's holiday.
Yeah.
The way you feel after a week with the lads, you're like, oh, shit, it was like that for 2 years.
Wow.
Put 5 stone on. And I started having just these... And I had a successful business. That was the problem. So I had a different business by
still
this point.
Still running a fitness business.
So the fitness business, I kind of sold almost all of that. And I started a supplement company, which I sold in 2015, start of 2015. But then I was doing the marketing. So I was teaching marketing. So I had a bit of the fitness business. I was teaching other personal trainers how to make money. Mm-hmm. So I had that. That was successful as well. But it was all online, which sounds amazing, but it's fucking lonely, man.
Lonely, man.
Yeah. So while I was there, I started having these, I'd spend most of my days arguing with people on the internet, right? And then my weekends just very lonely, drinking, and I'd have these meltdowns where I'd be like in the car and I'd be like, fuck, I can't do this. And then I remember one time in particular, I was in Estepona next to the Plaza de Toro and I just had this meltdown in a car park. My wife was like, you need to go to the doctor's. So I saw a doctor there, and obviously it's in Spain, so you have a private doctor. And he originally said, he was like, oh, you've got ADHD. I said, oh, okay. Didn't give us any meds. Said, come back in a few weeks. He said, you've got ADHD. He said, slow down. Give me a bit of advice. I can't even remember what it was. My memory of the time in Marbella is sketchy as fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I was either drinking and sniffing or low, very low.
Yeah.
That was my memory of that time. Funny enough, I did 5 ADHD tests last week and I passed them all with flying colours.
Wow.
Mad. One of them may as well have been it wasn't do you have ADHD, it may as well have been are you Paul Maud? Do you know what I mean? Right. It was like a game of Guess Who, but I was the thing. I was like, what? That's me. But anyway, then he said, right, he gave us antidepressants after that. They seemed to make it worse.
Yeah.
Like, they seemed to make it worse. And then it got to the point where I had to move home. I remember the incident. There was an incident where when I actually lived in Marbella for 2 years, I'd move house 4 times. Who does that?
Mm-hmm.
Moved house 4 times. It must be the area.
Yeah.
It must be the apartment's too small, neighbours are too loud. Just had all these different, it was like I was running away from something.
Yeah.
So I ended up, I joined this CrossFit gym, tried to get in shape because at this point I was 5 stone overweight and had no friends. Making a lot of money. Leslie hated me.
Mm.
And I was training in this CrossFit gym, and I remember one day I went out on the booze with a guy that owned the CrossFit gym. Me, him, and his brother. We got pissed, snorted loads of coke, and then all of a sudden they just turned on me and beat the shit out of me.
Oh, wow.
These were people that the same day that had lunch with my wife and my pregnant wife and my fucking 6-month-old son. So they beat me up, and I was like, I got home, I opened the door, my 6-month-old son. I think he was older than that actually at the time. He was 2 when we moved home, so it must have been a year old. He was walking actually, and he answered the door, and my fucking shirt's ripped, my teeth are out, had my teeth knocked out, my nose is to one side, and my wife was like, we need to go home.
Wow.
We need to go home. We stayed there for a little bit longer, and she had Nina was born there, and we came home, and obviously she's relieved because you got to think about this, she's got a 2-year-old, a newborn, or an 18-month-old and a newborn, and me, no one else.
Yeah.
So she's like, we fucking need to go home.
Exactly, yeah.
And the problem is, I got home, mate, and it got worse because I didn't realise it was that was the problem. So now I'm home. Oh, I love being home. I saw my old mates again.
Yep.
Easier to get gear.
Yeah.
Because I've got more numbers. Easier to find people to drink with. Because I've got lads, I've got friends that were working offshore, so they'd be home through the week.
Yep.
Be lads that wanted shift workers that wanted to get on it. So I found it easier. And then it got towards that December that year. And it was the 19th of December, actually. Is it the 19th of December today? I think it is. 19th of December today. So 8 years ago today.
Good timing.
I was going to kill myself.
Wow.
8 years ago today, that's wild.
Whew. Yeah.
So this one day, obviously there'd been a build-up of this. I remember leaving the house. I'd have been on the booze at the weekend. And I remember leaving the house and I was just like, fuck it, I can't do this anymore. And I'd go on these long drives. Like, mate, during that time home, I'd disappear for 2 or 3 days at a time.
Mm-hmm.
It was all a cry for help. I'd turn my phone off. I'd check it just to make sure someone had and then I'd just turn it off. It was all a cry for help. And then this one day, I went on a long drive and I drove to them, the cliffs that I've spoke about before. And I was just like, my overriding thought was, like, no one would even give a fuck if I killed myself.
Mm.
These people that I go out and drink with, they don't care. My mum and dad don't give a fuck. I mean, I wasn't messaging anybody and telling them what was wrong with me. And then I always get criticised for this for some reason because my wife was there. My wife had ran up to the cliffs. She left my daughter in the car. That's wild, that. So my daughter was maybe, she was born in the May. This was the December. So she was like 6, 7 months old. She left her in the car to kind of rescue me. And everyone's like, but why was she there? Did you tell her? I was like, she was there because every time I left the house, she never knew if I was going to come back. So of course she was fucking, she'd follow me up and down the coast all of the time because that, the coast beautiful, but it's a long stretch of road. It's a long stretch of road and so many people a year jump off them cliffs. It's wild, mate. Yeah. Drive off them. It's wild. And she said to me the words that changed my life, which a lot of people will have heard by now, which she said to me, think about the kids. And I was like, I am thinking about the kids. I was so, there's no logic when you're that low, so it's all emotion. And I said, I am. They'd be better off without me. And she said, well, think about them growing up then as those kids whose dad killed himself. And there was like, something went off
yeah.
then. And I wasn't, and it was almost like, okay, let's go then. I was like, I can't, what are you going to say to that?
Yeah.
And it's funny, my wife says to me, and I didn't know this until probably last year, she did a little edit on my first book. She did a little, she got interviewed, and she said she actually considered letting me do it because she didn't want to see me. She didn't want to see me in that much pain.
Yeah.
In that, I was like, suffering. Really? She thought it was her fault.
Yeah.
She was like, does this mean I'm a shit wife? I'm a shit mother? And then she said she actually considered, she was very close to saying, well, okay, if it gets you out of this much pain and suffering, then do it. Isn't that wild? It's wild. It was a very interesting conversation. That we only had that conversation last year.
Yeah.
But it didn't even get better from then. It was a wake-up call. It was a wake-up call that I needed. But even then, I couldn't.
Just before.
I'd been diagnosed bipolar. I almost missed that part out. Part of Morbea was that they diagnosed me bipolar there.
Right.
But he couldn't treat it. And he was like, it's not really a thing in Spain. He said, it's not really a thing. So I came back home and they put me on all sorts of meds. I saw all sorts of shrinks. I'd actually started to, during that time between the May or the June and the December, I'd actually started to do a little bit. I'd actually started to think, well, maybe this is me.
Mm.
Maybe I have created this. Maybe my lifestyle's got something to do with it. Maybe I should get in shape. And I started, I'd been over at the States, did a course in the States, I'd learned a bit about meditation then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem with that is, and I think it's a real problem with personal development, is now I knew better, but I wasn't doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
So for a long period of my life, I was doing shit and then just thinking, well, I didn't link my behavior to the way that I felt.
Yeah.
I didn't link my habits to the situation I was created. I was always like, oh, I was a bit of a victim.
And the annoying thing is you have to make that link yourself. The doctors and all of these, a lot of them are not
making... Didn't tell you, nah. Oh, I've got bipolar.
It's getting better.
You're bipolar.
But not...
But then once I found the tools and I wasn't using them, it made me feel worse.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It was like I started to become aware that, well, I know what to do and now I'm not doing it. Before, I didn't know what to do. So it was like, before I was unconscious incompetence, I would call it.
Yeah.
But now I was consciously incompetent. I knew that what I was doing wasn't right.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't realize that drinking's a problem. or the sniffing's a problem. No, it's exactly. Just what you do. Exactly. It's just what lads do. That's just right. What blokes do this. But then I was consciously incompetent. And now I was like, I was shit and I knew I was shit.
Mm.
Whereas before I was shit and I didn't know I was.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? It's like you think you're good at golf until you try and hit the ball.
You didn't know what to do. You didn't know. But now you've moved into the place where you know what you do.
Yeah, now I've got this guilt and shame around
it.
Which made it worse.
Yeah.
And still, it was my fault. But now I was like, it's my fault.
Yeah.
So I was double. So that was the December. And then even a few days later, Christmas Day, I remember it. My family weren't even in my house with me because I couldn't. I was so volatile. I was like, Leslie went to my mum and dad's for Christmas Day, and a lady called Donna had came around, and she had been drinking on the Christmas Eve, and she came around and she just gave me a look. I'm trying to get her on my podcast, but I can't get her on, right? She gave me a look. She didn't even say anything. That was like, she just looked at me over the top of her glasses, and it was like, you know, one of those looks where you're like, she means business here. It was just a look of, you need to get your fucking shit together.
Yeah.
And then that was the second wake-up call that I got.
Yeah.
And then obviously it's been a big turnaround since then.
It's amazing that moment marked so much for you.
Can't even say anything?
You were on suicide watch.
Suicide watch?
Yeah.
On the day, Donna's in the South Tyneside Community Support. I think it's called Community Support. Something like that, which is basically suicide watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, and that moment of not saying anything was like, oh, yeah, this is... I need to do something about this.
The moment of igniting some change inside.
Yeah, at that point in my life, mate, I was on the strongest meds you can get.
Yeah.
For bipolar, it's called lithium.
Yeah.
And they gave me that. But I think the challenges that I had at that point, mate, I was, at that period of my life, mate, I was still, some days I wasn't even drinking, but I was having lines of coke off my desk in the middle of the day to feel something.
Mm.
Because these pills that I got, because obviously bipolar, you're told you get extreme highs and extreme lows.
Yeah.
And these meds balance it out.
Supposedly.
But the problem was is that I went from feeling extreme highs and extreme lows to feeling fuck all.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was like a zombie. So I was doing lines of coke off my desk before I jumped on what was before Zoom? GoToMeeting. Yeah. Remember that?
Yep.
GoToMeeting. Then Zoom took over the world. I'd have a line of coke before I went on there just to give me some energy. It's all I could feel. And then, yeah, them are some dark times, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I want to mention with you is I had a couple of suicide attempts from a young age.
Yeah.
And the thing was, it's not the, you know, I hear some people talk about suicide and they say, well, how can you do that? Or how can you do that to your family? Or how can you be so selfish? And that is not what is happening inside the brain.
Nah.
Right. And the thing is, it is the world is better off without me here. Like I'm doing people a favor if I execute on
and
this.
I think it's this, and again, I've never been a woman, so I don't know, but I think it can feel especially difficult for a man, because this is when people say, this is my problem with it. I think this just talk message is great, but what if it's not the answer? What the fuck do you say?
Yeah.
Who to? You already feel like a fucking burden. You already feel like an inconvenience to everybody.
Yeah.
You already feel like you're letting everybody down. So talking about it feels like it would be worse. That's why, and I'm like, why do people not do it? I'm like, that's exactly why they don't do it.
Yeah.
Because you already feel like a fucking loser. So, and my message is, what if there's something else that isn't talking? Yeah. I've seen people talk and continue the same fucking habits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I needed to woke the fuck up. I didn't need someone to put their arm around me and tell me everything was okay. Mm. I needed something that woke me the fuck up.
Yeah.
One of them was that Wake Up Warrior program that I did. One of them was my wife, and then one of them was Donna.
Yeah.
All basically got to the point where it was like, stop fucking lying. Stop bullshitting. Get a handle on it. So yeah, the whole feeling like I was a burden was massive for me.
Yeah.
Like, I was convinced that I wasn't doing it to my family. I was doing it for them.
Mm.
I was doing it for them because, again, I wasn't the guy that was really quiet and people didn't know that I had a problem. I was very vocal about it because I'd disappear.
Yeah.
I'd be on the booze and I'd be on the sniff and I'd be volatile.
Yep.
Very volatile. So it wasn't as though it would have been a surprise to my wife that I did it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I did genuinely believe that they would be better off without my emotional outbursts. Leslie would be better off without having to deal with me as well as two kids. My kids would be better off without an angry dad that was fucking throwing things and slamming doors and would disappear. Like, I honestly thought that I'd be doing it for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, getting yourself out of this, tell me how you turned this around.
Shit. One of the things, this is going to sound mad, one of the things that help me with this, and this is something that I believe to this day now, was just this simple concept of and creating a future. I couldn't see a future. This simple concept of just setting some goals, creating a bit of a mission, something to get stuck into. So for me back then, it actually started with getting physically better, mm-hmm. physically in shape.
Yep.
And I tried, one of the benefits that I had at that time in my life was because I was a PT, I had access to some of the best people in the world, but I didn't do it. I was like, oh, and this is another challenge that I had. I even turned my office into a fucking gym. I knew people, I knew a friend of mine, Gregory, actually kitted out my whole gym. Mm-hmm. My whole office was a gym, amazing kit, and I still didn't do it. And then one day, I remember my friend, I've got some great contacts in that field. I've got a friend called Andy who started a company called Boxer Size. You'll have heard of it. Everyone's tried to take them on and never got anywhere near. It's the industry leader, and I know the guy that started that, and I got my friend on a course with him, and he said, mate, I need to practice holding the pads. He took me on the pads, and I was like, oh, fucking hell, I'm out of shape. And then he came to my office, he said, do you fancy doing some sparring? Never done it before. I was like, aye, fuck it. And he punched me in the face, and I was like, fuck, I like a bit of this. That changed my life, because now I'd felt alive. I felt something.
Yeah,
I'm getting goosebumps right now, and I was like, fuck, this is a bit of me, this. I mean, it hurt.
Yeah.
And I ended up, fucking hell, I got my nose broke multiple times. But it hurt. But I was like, oh, shit, this is the thing. And then I started looking forward to exercising. Mm-hmm. And then I started, just that was the kickstart for me. The boxing woke me up.
Yeah.
And I started to, because any doctor you go to is going to be like, have you thought about exercising?
Yeah.
And I was exercising. I can't even open the fucking curtains, mate.
Yeah.
The problem that I had actually when I was that low is that when I was that low, there's no way I was going to the doctor's. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No way.
No, exactly.
And by the time I got an appointment, I felt better. So I'd be going to the doctors and they wouldn't really do anything. Because my wife would be like, well, actually, she drag us there. And yeah. I was like, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I did feel fine.
Yeah.
So it's mad.
Yeah.
I remember one day.
But we're saying it's mad, but a huge proportion of society is in that place.
It is. You're right. It's strange. It is a strange thing, but... I don't even think I've spoken about that before, you know. But I remember one time, around the corner from here, I went for a consult, and I started talking to the woman. She was a shrink, and she said, you're manic now? I was like, no, I'm not. She's like, you're manic now, aren't you? And I fucking stormed out. I was like, I'm not manic. This is just fucking who I am. I'm not manic. I've just got good energy today. And that was another wake-up call for me. I'm like, what the fuck's up? Why are these people fucking judging me all the time? Why are these people making an assumption and labeling me all this kind of shit? And that was also one of the moments where I was like, I'm not gonna live with the whole I'm bipolar thing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to live with it. It's just a label that the doctor's given me. Like, I, that was the moment where I was like, no, fuck this. I'm not having these people label me as this. That's not who I am.
Yeah.
This is just a diagnosis that I've been given.
Interestingly, I was at a conference in the US, and the speaker got up, and they started to reveal line by line, and they were like, this is a sign if you are a CEO, and each line revealed, and as it revealed each line, he said, right, stand up if this is you. So, you know, the first one, and more people, and by the point time they reveal all of these different symptoms, right, of a CEO. Almost all of the room was standing up. There was a room of about 300 people. And then they peeled off the top where it said CEO. It said, this is the diagnosis for bipolar disorder.
Really? That is fucking... I want to see this thing.
No, I know.
Shit, that sounds mad.
Yeah. And you talk about listening to the podcast, high D and high I and significance of that. And it's like, okay, we're labeling in part bipolar disorder, but this is all the factors of nutrition, diet, exercise.
And I say this a lot to the guys I'm talking to. I actually think there was a big link for me. And I figured this out maybe 2016, 2017. There was a big link between where my adrenaline was at. So obviously at some point the cocaine and the booze would shoot my adrenaline right up, and then there was a come down. Mm. But actually I realized several other points. I'd always have a come down after I'd been to an event. So I stopped speaking at events for a little bit.
Because
I'm like, it must be the events.
Yeah, okay.
I can't be on the stage. You think about it, mate, and this is something I've clearly had to get a handle on in the last few years, because last year I did a fucking theatre show with 1,000 people there. This year we sold out London. I spoke in front of 1,500 people in Belfast. I spoke at Wembley. There's loads of mad shit happened. But back then, I would do an event and then I'd need a week off work. Mm-hmm. And I actually just started managing my energy better, because that's what it is about, essentially, these big highs. What's a big high? Mm-hmm. A big energy output.
Yeah.
massive output of energy, and therefore what goes up must come down.
That's it.
So I actually just worked out, okay, well, I need to balance this out.
Yeah.
So for example, Thursday I had a mad event here, and then I flew, and then I got the train home, and I knew I was in Edinburgh at Tom Kitchen's restaurant, which was fucking incredible. I knew I was going to be buzzing off that. So this week I've actually planned a fairly simple, easy week.
Exactly.
Compared
so
to
you
normal.
Can recover.
So I actually just started to balance my time and my energy, and I started to handle shit better. I was just saying, with the booze thing, I only had this insight last Thursday probably, where I was like, my life hasn't been easier this year. It's probably been more intense and there's a lot more going on, but it's felt easier.
Yeah, because you've been able to handle it.
It hasn't.
Higher resilience.
The facts wouldn't indicate that I've had an easier year, but the feelings would indicate that I have, which is strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're you know, in our higher ticket coaching program, all aimed at business owners, etc.
Yeah.
You know, I speak to these guys and a lot of them say, you know, I say, is it impacting your business? And they're like, well, no, I mean, you know, I do a lot of business because I drink, and actually it's helped me grow the business and everything
That's
else. And I'm like, okay, yeah, but you just have to pause with me for a second, because I guarantee you that when you get on top of this and you make the changes, the underlying behavior changes, a little bit of what we're talking about, you make these underlying behavior changes, that you're going to realize, much like Nick James said to me, right, I've just realized I've spent the last 5 years operating on 80%. What's that cost him? I mean, he's got a very successful business and doing multiple millions a year.
Yeah.
He's been operating on 80%.
Yeah.
You know, so, and this is the thing. I think alcohol brings me all of these things and I've built my business successfully, but actually it's really holding.
Well, I have this little thing right now where I'm like, do people think in order to join my program that they can't drink? And I kind of don't want, part of me doesn't want that attached to it.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't care if you drink or not. But then there was an event we did the other week where
You do it really well. I think I was listening, and what your key thing was, the decision was not to, we're going to come on to this, but the decision was not to stop drinking.
Yes.
The decision was to create a life that doesn't fit in.
Don't fit,
It's amazing.
But then I don't want to talk about it too much.
Yeah.
In fact, my friend Michael Heppel sent me a mad message. He commented, he messaged me, he said, Paul, I'm going to comment on your post about no booze, right? He said, but you know, it's mates banter. I was like, mate, you didn't have to tell me that. He commented saying, well, what are you going to talk about now? When your year's up, I see you've got a question for you about no booze. When your year's up, what are you going to talk about? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe the next year. But yeah, it's weird that my life has just felt easier.
Yeah.
Which is mad. And one interesting thing that I didn't think would happen was that I've enjoyed parties more.
Great.
Which I did not think in a million years. No. I thought I'd have to avoid them. I didn't really like them that much anyway. But I've actually stayed up later, had a better time, danced more, and fucking had more fun, which I never in a million years would, because that's what everyone automatically assumes.
Yes.
So actually I stayed up later, had a better time, made more jokes, had more fun, been louder, and danced more.
Amazing.
Which is wild.
So again, this is all the culmination of you unraveling everything that you've been preconditioned to believe, that we need alcohol or some kind of substance in order to be able to have a good time.
Yeah.
And then you've let go of all of that stuff and you're like, well, hang on a minute. What is it to reengage with young Paul Mort, who didn't need drugs in the school to go and socialize and dance and have fun and connect with that in a genuine way?
At school, that's mad. At school, I was a bit of an introvert. Like, I was quite shy.
Where are you?
It's interesting. I was quite shy, which is...
Well,
I wasn't shy. I cracked jokes.
Yeah.
And I was a kid that tried to make everyone laugh. And then that kind of slowly got beaten out of me. And then I became, well, what am I now?
Yeah.
When I was 16, I remember thinking, well, what? I didn't know who I was for a long time, because I was like, well, if you can't crack jokes and make people laugh, like, what are you? I didn't have anything else. I didn't have anything else. A bit of Spanish.
Muy bien.
Poco Espanol.
I got my cue there.
Poco Espanol.
I just want to go back to the change. So, and I think this is really key. If we look at it, is, you know, even though, you know, rightly, in that moment when you're in your darkest, you don't feel like talking to somebody. You don't feel like some of this, but what you connected to was with some habits, some good habits.
Some habits, some exercise. Goals that excited me again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
getting
vision.
A handle on my health.
Exactly.
And then all the other things started happening. And then I started to create some big shit. And then people started asking me. That's how I ended up doing this.
Yeah.
So back then, I wasn't doing the unstoppable thing.
Yeah.
I had a marketing company and a supplement company. The start of 2015, I realized that I hated the supplement company. Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy it. I was a nightmare for my business partner. Imagine being my business partner. Nightmare. The guy, Tim, still killing it now with a company called Lean Greens. He lived in Portugal when I met him. So I used to drive from Malaga to Portugal quite regularly, or the other way around. We spent a lot of time together. And then when I had the meltdown, I moved back to England, and he moved back to England as well. And then a few months later, I was like, mate, I'm out. So he bought me out. So the great thing about having a successful business was that I was able to invest in courses, seminars, workshops. I could go to Germany for 9 days and do the Byron Katie 9-day school for the work, which was incredible. I was able to try things and test them.
Yeah.
And then, like I say, people start noticing.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, that's how I did everything, really.
So
I became a PT because I was fat. I was an engineer and I lost loads of weight. And people asked me how I did it. And then I became a business coach because I built a successful fitness business and people asked me how I did it. And the same happened here.
Yeah.
People were saying, what are you doing? You seem different.
Mm-hmm.
How have you lost that weight? How are you doing this? And how have you got off them bipolar meds? And how are you able to do that now?
What had happened to the boozing and the sniffing?
The boozing. I would say the first time around, the boozing probably went from being 3 times a week, 4 times a week to, so the first thing I did was set these 90-day challenges. That's one of the things I learned in that Wake Up Warrior that woke me up was this concept of a 12-week challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I read a book called The 12-Week Year, which is an excellent book as well. Mm-hmm. Brian Moran, I think I wrote that, and I was like, well, I'm not going to drink for 90 days. And then I drank on 90 days. And that was drinking every quarter was a thing until last year.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you'd pretty much parked it
pretty
for
much
that whole
to
time.
Every quarter. I would celebrate with
and
a drink.
So you would celebrate once and then you would go back onto another 90 days?
For a week, I'd be on another 90 days. And that really worked really well for me, yeah. Actually. It worked really well for me. Maybe I drink
was it
two.
All out bender?
Aye.
Yeah.
Aye. I did less sniff.
Yeah.
Way less sniff. But then maybe at Christmas, I'd probably do a little bit more.
Yeah.
Probably 2 or 3 at Christmas. And then that was it until 2020. And then 2020, I had a real insight around boozing. Because again, listen, every 90 days, you'd be like, well, that's amazing. People are like, that's amazing that
that's you
go
amazing.
90 days without a drink. Yeah. I didn't think it was.
Yeah.
But then in 2020, I had a real interesting insight. I drank for 2 weeks in a row for the first time since 2014.
Right.
2 weeks in, 2 Fridays in a row. Christmas didn't really count for me. Mentally, it didn't really count.
Yeah.
I think everyone's like that.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, I'm going to do 1 year no booze in January. I'm like, well, start now when you've got a fucking 2 month head start or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so the 2020, 2 weeks in a row, I drank for 2 Fridays in a row and I felt like shit. One Friday, I would be like, it's fine. 2 in a row, I was like, ooh, feel like shit here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started journaling. I was like, why am I doing this? Because I didn't have anything else to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Fridays in our house, we'd call it more family Friday. Kids would finish school, we'd finish work, we'd go rock climbing, we'd go swimming, we'd go to the cinema, we'd go to the fair, we'd do bowling or something like that. Or I'd train jujitsu on a Friday night and then it was gone.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit, this is interesting. But still 2020, 2021, I'd still drink every quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, every quarter.
It's amazing to have gone through that, but I think the key part here is you'd clearly started investing in your personal development earlier, right? And so you were picking up all this stuff and
personal development, fucking hell, 1999 was my first Tony Robbins thing. Get the edge. I've seen him on QVC. Who's this guy? He's off Shallow Hall. I recognize him.
Yeah.
Big hands, big teeth.
Amazing.
Three easy payments of $9.99.
Yeah.
And that Get the Edge CD set, I'm telling you right now, even though it was 1999 and 15 years later, I had a fucking meltdown.
Yep.
That stuff now was still a massive wake-up call for me.
Completely.
Like a massive, and that's where I invested. That was my first experience.
I think
of
it's now the ultimate edge.
Is it?
Yeah, I think it's now, well, all of that is rolled
it
into
was amazing.
The ultimate edge, I think.
It was amazing. And even, it's weird, now I probably still quote things and I probably still learn things that I learned in 1999.
Yeah.
But there was clearly a period of my life where I turned off from it for a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All it was just, I couldn't find the link between sessioning and feeling like shit.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a hangover, right? That's normal.
Yeah.
You have a hangover, but then you get to a certain point in your life. I think it's probably when you start getting responsibilities.
Yeah, well, family, definitely.
I'm hungover and I'm treating them like, you treat people in a different way when you feel like shit, right?
Mm.
Whereas when you're a young guy, like, you're not, mate, I could go out boozing all day on a Saturday, take fucking 3 E's, bang 2 birds. I'm kidding. Stay up all night and then go and get man of the match, football.
Yeah.
And then next thing I know, I'm fucking 30 and I've got a 2 week hangover.
Yeah, exactly.
Smart eye. And then you just get on that cycle. And I suppose I got on this cycle at some point in my life of feeling like shit, drinking to feel better, making it through the week, celebrating because I made it through the week. It's just this mad cycle. Again, one of the biggest insights I've got this year is that there's two periods where I feel like drinking. One when I'm bored, two when I already feel like drinking.
Yeah.
Those are my two biggest insights on.
So I heard you saying that about, you know, you only really feel like having a drink when you feel like shit. And it's the worst time to have a drink. It's
but that's opposite. Also the time when think about this, I've got a cold right now. Yeah. And all I want to do is eat shit.
Yeah.
It's such a paradox, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I had a fucking Greg's baguette this morning. I'm like, why? Even if I wasn't feeling like shit, I'd eat better food. It's so weird.
Exactly. Why do we go down this fuck it button?
Self-soothing. Self-soothing, that's all it 100%. Is. Self-soothing. People call it self-sabotage. It's not. Mm. It's self-soothing. I'm doing something that made me feel better in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. And, you know, we touched on this a bit earlier. You know, you didn't come in this year. So, first of all, you are now... how many days
361, I think.
Yeah. So we're 4 days away. Is it a leap year? Four days away from 1 year no beer, which is amazing.
Wild.
Amazing.
And I did, it's weird. I've had so many insights about it. I keep it's been such a revolutionary thing, and loads of things have happened that I didn't think would, and I believe loads of things that I didn't believe I would. But the course with Dispenza, he said something that I really love, which is just, what's on the other side of this belief about this? And I was really interested in that with the booze. I remember the day, it was the 23rd of December was my last drink, but it was the 3rd of January I decided I wasn't going to drink anymore. Mm. So the 23rd, I remember, Mac, who you met before.
Yep.
In 2019, I went for a pint with him and all his mates, and I ended up going out till 2 a.m. They were like 21 or something. I had a great time. 2020, obviously, didn't happen. Last year, I said, I'm going to meet you and the lads later on. I'll come out with me shit jumper on and that. And I had a few drinks at home, and I never made it out, like, because I was pissed. Mm. I was pissed in the house, and I'm thinking, ooh, that 23rd, I was like, maybe this is not for me. I haven't even made it to a night out because I'm too pissed. Obviously, I'd gone too fast. And then I don't drink around my kids. I don't think my kids have ever seen me drunk. I'm just a big believer in not letting, I don't want them to see that. It feels weird. Mm-hmm. So when I go on holiday, I've never drank because my opinion with holidays, I mean, not since I've done a lad's holiday. So when I've gone on holiday with my wife and kids, I've never drank because I'm a big believer in, why would I want to feel worse when I come back of holidays?
Yeah. No.
I go on holiday, I feel better when I come back.
Relax, to unwind.
That's what it is. So I was like, why would I never could get my head around getting pissed all the time on holiday and feeling worse when you come back and needing another holiday.
Yeah.
My holidays were never escape for reality. They're almost like preparation for coming back kicking ass. So
I love that.
And it's been a big deal for me. So I remember the 3rd of January, I think it was the 3rd or the 4th, we're coming back from Dubai, and I was writing my goals for the year. And I said, I'm not going to drink this year. My wife was like, why? Because she knows that I only drank 5-6 times a year anyway. Why? I just want to see if I can. I want to see if I can do it.
Good.
But I think it happened on the base that I'd written all those other goals first. Yeah. And I know you probably want to talk about this because it was massive for me. Mm-hmm. And it's been massive for a lot of people. I just want to see if I can. Plus, I've got all this other shit I want to do. I don't think I'll hit them if I do this.
Yeah.
So, and then she's ended up doing it as well, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
She's adamant she's going to have a drink on Friday, though. She's like, I'm going to have a drink. Part of her, we might talk about it later, she's like, I don't want the pressure of... She's done it without even telling anyone she was going to do it. Whereas I think telling everybody, once I told everybody, that was it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the science is there.
Is
right?
It?
The goal. Oh, 100%. So first of all, just, I'm not going to get these numbers right.
Off the top
of my head.
But writing just, the goal
just,
down.
Just telling the goal, or just having the goal.
Yeah.
You're 50% chance of completion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Writing the goal down and telling someone, you know, 60% chance. Yeah. Here's the most important part. Writing it down. Telling somebody about it and then checking in with them weekly.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
90%.
It's probably why a lot of my programs work
exactly.
as well. But I told.
Because they come in and you hold them accountable each week in the coaching.
I think I told 57,000 people on my Facebook page and 30,000 people on my Instagram.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
who
could see you out.
Who in essence, mate, probably don't give a fuck.
No.
Do you know what I mean? But.
There'll be a few there.
This is me using fear of failure. I have a fear of failure like everyone else. This is me using my ego. Of not wanting to look like a cunt to my advantage.
Yeah.
And that, I suppose, once that decision was made, I was like, well, it's made now.
Also, I resonate very much with your fuck it button. I mean, mine was enormous. I used to describe it like, when my fuck it button comes out, I come out with a Rambo thing on and two guns. And I'm like, die
let's
everything!
Fucking go. Yes.
Right? Just destroy my life.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah.
And so recognizing that and understanding it, I built 1 year no beer in order to basically keep me accountable. And yeah. I don't have any choice. And now this is what I do and who I am yeah. as a human being.
Yes.
Leading by example is yes. critical. Well, I'm not saying everybody needs to go and
I'm just really intrigued by the whole thing as well. People are like, you going to drink? And I change my mind every day.
Yeah.
Right now, I actually feel like I will because I feel like shit.
Yeah.
I've got a cold. Everyone else has. We've had a very mad quarter. What a mad year, really. I wrote down my wins this morning. I was like, shit. I'm going to make a post on Wednesday about them. Part of he's been like, I don't want to trigger people by sharing all these. I don't want to seem like, it's not like me to seem like I'm bragging, but I really feel like I'm bragging about what we've done this year. Do you know what I mean? I'm yeah. like, oh, I might have to tone this down. I never really think that. I'm like, fuck it, I'll tell everyone because I'm proud of myself and it might inspire people. But this one, I was like, shit. This feels big.
I just 100% want to encourage you here to you know, the way you come across
yeah.
in your messaging about yeah. this whole alcohol thing yeah. is so spot on.
Is it? Oh, thank you,
I think
man.
You're really reaching, you know, your background, your experience, yeah. the whole Marbella and yeah. really going for it off yeah. the edge. I think just like keep going.
Yeah, it's a real interesting thing because again, a lot
there'll
of people.
There'll be so many people listening and who are like, I'm so like.
Do you know what I think people like? Do you know what I think people like that I wasn't? Do you know when a lot of people quit drinking? It's because they were fucking alcoholic. Mm-hmm. I would never consider myself in recovery.
Yeah.
I would never have considered myself addicted to anything either.
Yeah.
I may have been. Who yeah. knows? So I remember Jeff Thompson, this guy, really smart guy, Jeff. And he says it was one of his books saying that an addiction is just something that you don't think you can stop.
Exactly.
Joe Dispenza said it.
A
as well
compulsive behavior that you do even though you know it hurts you.
Yeah.
Well, hang on.
You don't think you can stop.
That is so many behaviors.
It is.
We all have addiction.
It is. We do.
We don't like to talk about
and
that.
I love word. This. I love this concept of, oh, you don't think I can stop it, do you not?
Yeah.
Let's fucking see that. You know, that whole yeah. proving people wrong thing that I quite like. But I have this open, I'm never that open minded, right? But I'm really open minded. Part of us is like, I'm not willing to commit to not drinking or drinking. I'm like, I'm just gonna see what happens.
Yeah.
If I do, I do. But I'm interested to see what happens if I do as well. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
like part
exactly.
of us is like, if I do drink, I wonder how I'll react to yeah. one. And then I wonder how I'll react if I get pissed the next day. But then part of us is like, well, why would I bother? I get the whole thing. I'm just very, I find it quite fascinating. I'm finding myself. And my beliefs around the whole thing fascinating right now. Like it feels like a science experiment.
Yeah,
which is mad.
Well, let's talk about your experiences of yeah. this 1 year no beer.
Yeah.
What are your insights?
Well, the biggest one is why I was drinking.
Okay,
and I didn't think it was that because everyone's like, "Oh, what are you drinking to celebrate?" And I'm like, "Well, I kind of did." But I was, if I look at those quarterly celebrations, really, it was because I was fucking exhausted by the end of the quarter because yeah. I emptied my tank.
Build.
Empty my tank. All right, let's go. Partly celebration, part I'm fucked here.
Yeah.
Actually, I remember last year was I had a bit of a breakthrough as well. We did an event in the October in Manchester and I got pissed on the way home in the car. And I was like, I would never normally, this is a weird thing. Felt weird. Me and my wife's driving and I'm drinking.
Yeah.
This is interesting behavior. So that was, I suppose, another
wake up.
Another one in the bank. In the bank of, you know, when you were saying before about these, you're actually thought about it 3 years earlier.
Exactly.
I think I'd thought about it earlier, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
2020 was probably the first time where I was like, I wonder if I could do longer.
Mm-hmm.
So, the biggest ones were the reasons why, which were boredom.
Yeah.
And I suppose you could call it burnout. Those are the two reasons.
Yeah.
The other one was peer pressure. I haven't had any.
Amazing.
I think that becomes an excuse for people.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I haven't had any, though, was also because I've been honest about it. You know, I'm not drinking, mate. It makes me feel suicidal. I haven't said that, but a lot of people could easily say that.
Yeah.
But I've just come out with it and said this. The other one was definitely creating.
I imagine you're pretty alpha in your group.
Mega.
Okay, so but then, you know, and that is, it means that you probably were the burn, putting the peer pressure on everyone, right? You were
a little bit.
You were the
yeah,
starter.
Drop one of these, mate, with the key out on that.
Exactly. What's wrong with you? Come on.
Aye.
So, but then also that would limit more your peer pressure part because you're the strong alpha.
I think so. I think you're right, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Which is, it's a kind of a different kind of challenge as well because everyone expects you to be drinking.
That's it.
Do you know what I mean? Really expects you. You're the leader. Yeah. It's an interesting thing, that, actually. Yeah, so I was honest about it, which is really interesting. I didn't have any peer pressure. The other thing is definitely, we talk about leverage of achieving goals. You need a big reason why.
Completely.
Which I think is important.
Yeah.
But also, you need a fucking plan. Do you know what I mean? Some people, they're like, you could have a really big reason why. You're like, oh, I want to do better for my kids and that. It's a massive reason why, but then you still drink.
Yeah.
Like, what was your plan? Well, my plan was not to drink. Like, that's not a plan.
It's not. It's actually significant in there because like the brain saying, doesn't hear the not.
No, it doesn't. Exactly.
So your plan is drink.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, exactly. That's why I was saying, you were saying before about what I said about the, my goal wasn't not to drink.
Yeah.
My goal was the other shit.
Exactly.
Not drinking was just the cost of our
my
mission.
My goal, that the was other the, shit.
That was the price I had to pay. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That was the price I had to pay if I wanted. And mate, I haven't even hit 75% of the goals that I set, but they were fucking outrageous.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They were outrageous. So that was that. That was that part. That was the peer pressure part.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan. The plan.
Yeah.
I just had to put plans in. I know where my triggers are. I put plans in. And they were just... And another insight that I had was the one from 2020 where I drank because I had nothing else to look forward to. But now, drinking would be a downgrade in terms of living an exciting life. Mm. Drinking was the thing that I looked forward to.
Yeah.
Now, I just... And this is just a decision. People don't get it as a decision. Now, I look forward to other things so much that booze might come in. But the reality is, on Friday now, I've booked in a training session to go and train.
Yeah.
And me and Leslie are going for lunch.
Yeah, lovely.
Like, if I didn't plan those two things in,
yeah.
Or then we're picking the kids up from school, which is also another reason to be like, well, why would I drink?
Yeah, exactly.
Next day's Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Guess what I've done Christmas Eve? Booked Avatar in 4DX. So I'm like, I have
amazing.
To, yeah, so I'm looking forward to them exactly. Instead of thinking, when's
exactly.
my next drink?
Exactly.
So they're exciting to me. So someone said, you're not miss going to sitting in a pub with the boys drinking. My yeah. part of me does. Of but course. I look at my life, I'm like, that's boring as fuck.
Mm.
That's boring compared to the other things that I've got planned.
Yep.
Which, and I think that's massive. So the one thing that I did also on that flight home, where some of the goals were like, this is weird. I've never been to as many football matches. I've been to loads of mad places. So obviously I've been to almost every Sunderland home game, been to a bunch of Sunderland away games, been to Wembley, which was the first real time where I'm like, ooh, I would love a fucking beer now. when you've been to Wembley six times and lost every time, twice in the space of 2 months in 2019, well, I was wasted at both. But this in 2020, last year, not drinking that was the real big challenge. Mm. So I've been to Wembley, fucking hell.
Was that like in the bus with the boys on the way down?
No, like in the stadium.
Yeah, just there.
On the train on the way down.
Yeah.
In the stadium, in the party after, in the hotel after. I'm in this hotel bar with fucking Marco Gabbiadini, by the way, who's my first ever football hero because he scored a win against Newcastle. He's in the bar talking to me and that, and everyone's drinking an alcohol-free beer. It was actually the first alcohol-free beer that I ever had.
Mm.
5 months in. It was in May.
Right.
5 months in. So we did that, and then I've been to Rangers against Celtic. I've been to. I've been to Liverpool against West Ham, Villa against Arsenal. I've been to where else have I been? Roma against Bologna, mad. Tottenham against Burnley. I've just been all these football games because that's the kind of shit that I look forward to. And I was like, I'm not going to link booze into that.
Yeah.
And I just, when I planned all that in, I was like, well, where does booze go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where does it go? Like, I'll do that again. I started doing that again on Friday because we had a big goal setting thing, and I started doing, where does booze go?
Yeah.
So I've got so many other things to look forward to that there's just no space for it to fit.
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't feel like it's a sacrifice to my life. It feels like it would slow me down. Do you know what I mean? Great. Everyone thinks that not boozing is a sacrifice. It doesn't feel like that to me.
Yeah.
It feels like I've had to sacrifice it, but not.
Yeah, it's
but,
come.
But
it's
for
come
things that are more exciting.
Exactly.
Because you think about this, I was talking to the guys about this on Friday. Not boozing as a goal. Boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most people, I think, they don't hit their goals because their goals are too hard or too unrealistic. It's that they're too boring.
Yeah.
Not doing something is a terrible goal.
Well, also, it's got that attached to it in society. I mean, we have been conditioned in society that, oh, he's not drinking, therefore he's boring. I have literally overheard people, a group of lads talking, going, he's such a good player. Yeah, but we can't invite him. He's like the best player of the group. Yeah, but we can't invite him because he doesn't drink.
Really? Fucking hell.
Right,
it's
so
wild,
you're like, okay, so society is so ingrained in this idea that, but then this is the encouragement.
But even
to
me,
saying,
even to the person setting the goal, not doing something, whatever it is, not eating sugar, not eating carbs, not going to the strippers, not texting your ex, all of those are boring.
Yeah, because you're denying yourself from something.
So you've got to, and again, with any habit, it's with any bad habit, you've got to replace it with a good one, but that goal just sounds boring. And like you said, if the goal was not boozing, my focus would be on the boozing.
Yeah.
I'm not drinking. It's like saying, going to the titty bar and saying, I'm not looking at the tits. The tits are there, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, that was huge for me. Mm. Huge for me. The other thing that I found was not drinking does trigger some people.
Yeah.
But it inspires others.
Yeah.
I think you've got to be all right with both.
And some, most inspire them quietly at the bar with you just for a minute. It's like, how do you do this thing?
I couldn't believe it when I ran an event in November. We had about 50 guys. No, we didn't. It was upstairs, so we must have had less, 33 or something. It was a jam-packed upstairs. 33 maybe. And so many of them said, I haven't drank this quarter. And I was like, oh, shit. I never told you not to drink.
Yeah.
I never said make not drinking a goal. Yet, there was, I would say, 15 of them said, I haven't drank this 90 days. And I was like, shit, was that me?
Yeah.
Just well me done. Not doing it.
Well done.
And I didn't know whether it was or not, but I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And that's also the way I started worrying about, people think that if you want to join my program, you can't drink. Because I don't want anyone to think that, even someone going, for some people, going 2 weeks without drinks, a big deal.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That should be celebrated.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? So I don't want everyone to think, oh, well, if I join Paul's program, it's about not boozing. Yeah. I mean, you want that.
No, but what we're clearly saying is one of the greatest upgrades you can get as an entrepreneur, right? That's going to improve your decision making.
Yeah.
It's going to massively improve your productivity and energy. Like, I talk to these guys in business who are running very successful businesses, and I'm like, yeah, but it's not about having more energy and more productivity, because we all want more of that, right? We're searching for that.
The entrepreneurs know they can get away with. They know they can flatline it though.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Entrepreneurs are used to getting by and no sleep and feeling like shit.
Yeah, that's true. But then it is the more intuitive and better decision making that you make when you park it for a bit.
One of the things I've found, is it's like, if I can do this, what else could I do?
Yeah, that's another one. Which
do you know what I mean?
With building good habits.
If I can go there and not drink, self-worth. I must be a fucking animal, me.
Joe Dispenza talks about this a lot, right? Self-discipline and things, like being the secret to transformation.
It hasn't felt like discipline, though, because discipline has this whole, well, it must fucking suck then.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's the byproduct of changing something like that.
It is,
you feel like, actually, I'm in control.
Sometimes I don't think about it at all.
Yeah.
And then other times I'm like, fucking hell, this is, when a number pops up on my screen and I check it, I'm like, fucking hell, that's a long time.
Brilliant.
But then part of us is like, oh, you're just getting fucking started, dickhead.
Exactly. So talking about
there's so many things going through my mind, man.
Where are you going after this?
As well go for 400.
Great.
Do you know what I mean? But I don't know.
Yeah.
And this is why I'm so intrigued. What am I going to do? Am I going to have one and then start again? Am I going to have none? But it feels good that now I've done a year, I don't feel like I have to make a decision.
Yeah.
Which is a real, I've never been in that place before. I don't feel like I have to decide whether it's a yes or no. I'm like, why would I drink?
Mm-hmm.
Why would I keep going? Why would I deny myself of, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But then I'm thinking, well, what is it that I like about drinking? What is it that I like about drinking? Because I'm sociable as fuck anyway. I actually become less sociable when I drink.
Yeah.
It's weird. I become more quiet. I become angrier. I'm like, what the fuck are you looking at? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You become, I think sometimes your focus becomes a little bit more narrow. Part of me's like, can I go yet?
Yeah.
I was talking to my friend at jiu-jitsu about this the other week. He's like, I might do you no booze next year. He's a right hard cunt as well, actually, hard as fuck. He said, are you like me, Paul? He said, when I'm at a party, I kind of want to go back to the room so I can start the proper drinking.
Yeah.
Is that interesting, that? I was like that.
Yeah.
I'd be at a party and I'd be like, can I go yet? So I can start actually drinking without having to stand in a queue at the bar.
Mm.
So I can properly, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Because
when you're at home or in your hotel room, you're not waiting for anyone. You can just fucking get right into it. Do you know what I mean?
That was me though.
So I social for a bit, and then I'd start to get tired, and then I'd be like, I'm gonna go back to the fucking room now.
Yeah.
So I can start really drinking.
Dangerous places.
Very dangerous places.
And this is it with everyone. It creeps up in different ways and people behave in different ways. And it's not sociable, but it's drinking at home.
Yeah.
But
I'm just fascinated now by it.
The one thing you've said in through this is about, you know, how important it was to have a future vision. Critical, right? Future vision was critical. And also,
I think that's the biggest reason. I think that's the biggest contributor to this male suicide thing.
Mm.
It sounds
weird. A lack of future vision.
A lack of no compelling future. You can't see a future that inspires you, that excites you, that fires you up. You can just see now and how much pain you're in and your past.
Totally.
You can't see. And any future that you can see might be filled with anxiety and dread.
Yeah.
You haven't, and again, part of us is like, that's created, because it is created.
Yep.
But part of us is just, well, no one's showing people how and why. Do you know what I mean? I believe that that is the number one contributor. It's certainly not talking.
Yeah.
That's what it comes across as, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What's the biggest contributor to male suicide? Not talking.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's bullshit.
Mm.
And it's amazing to talk to someone. Talking therapy is incredible, I think. And having an outlet and having a support group and a peer group and a wife that can support you was a benefit for me.
Completely.
But that didn't stop me.
A wife who saved you.
Oh, 100%. 100%. A wife who saved
Round
me.
Round of applause for this.
So that was important, but I don't think that's not necessarily a solution. I don't think it's the cause of it.
Yeah.
I think not having a compelling future is the cause of it. Completely. We talk about not drinking is boring.
Yeah.
So I think drinking and sniffing is a massive contributor to the suicide thing. But
that is my just reflection back to you, is going through a year, and this we see people do a lot, then they're like, I don't know what I'm going to do after this. And you know, we have a negativity bias. We have a very, very ingrained habit that alcohol is pertinent and part of life and society, right? So if you leave it to, I don't know, then you are the problem. You are putting it to...
Mate, I'm so glad we've touched on this, because guess what I haven't done yet for next year?
Oh, you haven't done the goals and the future vision and everything else.
Nah.
So
this week, for me, because we're going to Thailand on Boxing Day, I'm still on this quarter's goals.
Yep.
I'm still in them. So Friday, I should do... You've just gave me the answer.
Good.
There we go. At some point in the next... I started doing it on Friday. That's what helped me make the decision.
Yeah.
Once I set the goals for next year, I'll be like, well, no, I haven't got... And the thing is, I haven't... If I do drink on Friday, I've got a feeling it'll be one drink.
Yeah.
Because next day is Christmas Eve. Too much going on.
Yeah.
Too busy. My wife seems to have invited everyone on my Facebook page to come for a C-dip. I was like, where the fuck did this happen?
Great.
How is the 40 people now coming to mine in your C-dip, Leslie? So I have to do that on Friday. And then it's Christmas Day and then I'm away.
Yeah.
In a country where I would never drink anyway.
Yeah.
So.
That's good.
Yeah. But notice how I still haven't committed to not drinking.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by why I haven't done that either. Do you know what I mean? I've just got a very, it's this, I've never had this level of open-mindedness about anything in my life.
Mm.
And I'm fascinated by it,
yeah.
By the psychology behind it.
It is fascinating.
And I've only just realized that I still haven't committed to not doing it.
Yeah,
but I haven't committed to doing it either.
Well, I think you will do it if you don't commit to not to
yes.
Nothing.
Yes, so do I.
I just think that the way we're ingrained in sight and everything else,
yeah.
Not making a decision around this is making the decision to drink.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? So, at least my wife's saying I'm having a drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But it's interesting. I'm now journaling in my head on a podcast live.
Good man. But ultimately, you know, I went through a year of not drinking, similar to you. I went through a year of not drinking, and then I thought, right, I'm going to have a few drinks, and I went out and got absolutely blasted.
Was after throwing two
up
drinks
that night. Well, no, I went to the bar.
Pommy's intrigued as to how fast I can get pissed as well. And did you get pissed off too?
No. I had like 6 or 7 pints. Then I had a whole bunch of drinks. But I was throwing up that night. I was throwing up the following day with my two daughters sat beside me, one of them in tears, my wife storming out the house. And I'm like,
shit.
Abstinence has not bred control, right? Mm. And this is the key thing here.
See, I'm interested in that as well.
So control, which is now what we do in our high ticket program, and is helping people to do the underlying behavior so that they can control their drinking.
Yeah.
That is to be able to have one and stop.
Yeah.
Right, to be able to enjoy half a drink or whatever it is, or choose. Now, you already have a high level of control in your life, and that is because of the underlying work that you've been doing for years, right?
This personal development
stuff, changing habits, routines, health, like all of that stuff is key. And plus, you talk about therapy. Trauma is the driver of addictive behavior.
Yeah.
So if you can't stop at one,
there is
trauma.
I just have this concept that I'm in love with. I might call me next book something like this. I like this concept of living an electric life. My life feels fucking electric.
Amazing.
Doesn't mean it's easy.
Yeah.
I have a lot of challenges of come course. My way. Fuck me.
Stressful as hell, I imagine.
Lots of criticism, lots of hate. People tell me I should have jumped. All that kind of shit, right? But it just feels electric.
Yeah.
And I don't think booze fits into that concept of having an electric life. I could...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It feels like the opposite.
Great.
Do you know what I mean?
The decision's made.
Yeah.
You just haven't made the decision yet. Nearly to make the decision. I think you're right. I think
I might just put a drink in front of me and see what happens. Part of me's intrigued by that. Do you know what it is? Maybe that's all I need. Maybe I just need to order a drink and look at it and be like, nah.
I want to touch on the amazing work that you are doing, mm-hmm. right? And so the business now and things like that. Tell us all a bit more about that.
The business now is kind of came from nowhere because I didn't plan on doing it.
Yeah.
I already had a successful business. Then I was like, and once you start seeing, I'd seen the benefit of back when I was a PT of people getting in shape and how impactful it was. Fuck me. I think about now as a coach, I didn't have a fucking clue. I tell people what to do. 1 in 10 would do it and get great results. The other 9, I'd be like, you lazy cunts. Lazy. You know what I mean? Because I didn't know. And then in business, I saw the impact of people making more money on their families and that. But there's nothing more inspiring to me than working with someone and seeing, this is what fills me heart the most. It happened a lot last Friday. It's why I had such a good time, I think. When someone's family member comes up to us and says, thank you. Not the guy himself, because I work with a lot of women now. Not them themselves. But when someone's wife comes up and says,
it's just
thank you for saving me husband.
Exactly.
Or mate, last year I got a card from 2 little boys who said, thank you for showing me dad how to live.
Yeah.
Blows me fucking head off.
I'm with you.
Every time it blows me head off. And that's...
It's rocket fuel.
And that's where, do you know what, mate? You'll be the same as me. You'll definitely get this. Well, I think it's terrible you're making money from fucking weak people. I'm like, mate, come
you're
to one of my events.
From suffering.
Come here. Come to my event here, right? Come to my event here and tell those men that they're weak.
Yeah.
They'll punch your fucking lights out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I love reading. Well, I don't. I always laugh at the comments on your stuff.
Yeah. Oh,
it's worse than mine.
I know.
Your comments are worse than mine. Where I'm like, oh, well, you looked happier before. That's because I was pissed. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I always look happy when I'm pissed, mate.
Yeah.
But I always see that in your eyes. But this is part of the reason why I never feel bad for talking about money and why I never feel bad for making it. Because when you see someone's life transform, I'm like, if they didn't put skin in the game to work with me, they wouldn't have done it.
They'd never have done it.
Because guess what? That's just criticizing me right now. You have access to fucking thousands of hours of free content.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You got hundreds of podcasts, hundreds of emails, hundreds of videos. I do a weekly Q&A. Fucking hell, I've wrote 3 books. 2 of them are free. 1 of them is £8, right? You've got access to all that information. And the only reason you haven't done anything with it is because you haven't invested.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why you haven't done anything.
Yeah.
So actually, my income is directly correlated to how many fucking lives are being changed.
Mm.
That's because money flows to value.
Exactly.
And I add value to people's lives. And they change their lives. It's not me doing the work. But like I say, it's just gone mad. From what started as me in a hotel room with fucking 6 people has grown to 1,000 people in a theatre.
Mm.
Mostly all of them pissed, by the way. It was such a... The theatre thing was such a mad thing, you know, because holy shit, probably since 2010 I did my first keynote on business, right? And I've done hundreds of keynotes, fucking hell, all over the world. I did Puerto Rico with Gary Vee this year, which was mental. But 1,000 people in a theatre on a Friday night in Newcastle was weird. No lights on because they're not making notes in a theatre.
Yeah.
They're not turning to the person next to them and sharing something like you have to at every conference you go to, right?
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Turn to the person next to you and introduce yourself.
Do a little group thing.
These fuckers are drinking out of 2 pint glasses. Me dad, this is mad, that we're joking about this when we're talking about not boozing, but again, it's not for everybody. Last year, so me dad's 67, never seen him pissed. At me after party, he was fucking steaming.
Mm.
He hasn't drank since.
Really?
He hasn't drank since. He was dancing on tables and that.
Oh, no.
I was like, Dad, he was puking up the next morning, 67. No. I'm like, Dad, what's the matter with you? He said, oh, son, I was just proud of you.
Aww.
He didn't know what to do. I was like, well, I paid for all the booze. That's why you drank. I put the free bar on. That's why you got pissed.
He was getting his money's worth.
Yeah, it's a real, it's just gone a bit, it's gone a bit mad.
Yeah.
Gone a bit mad, and I was saying to you when you came that every time I say I'm busy, I feel like I'm complaining. But the reality is, I'm busy doing shit that lights a fire in me.
Yeah,
it lights a fire in me. I get to show up every day and talk to people and share my experiences and coach people. Me fine well going home knowing that if they do what I've said, if they take their own advice on board, which is what coaching is really, then the kids are going to be fucked. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's, knowing that is sensational.
Effect. You're creating a lighthouse.
Sensational eye. It's like a butterfly lighthouse. Effect, man. It's mad.
Yeah.
It's like, I remember seeing a video by Garrett, actually, who's got Wake Up Warrior. He said something like, we're changing the world one person at a time, because you change a person, you change the family. You change a family, you change the fucking neighborhood. Yeah. You change the neighborhood, you change the whatever they call it. And then before you know it, it's a big statement, but you're kind of changing the world.
Yep.
It's mad. It's a mad thing, isn't
it's
it?
It's amazing.
When you think about it,
I can't do anything else.
It's It's like, fucking hell, we're like 13 million people have seen that video of me on the cliff. 13 million people. It's mad, that.
Amazing.
Do you know what I mean? I've got to remind people sometimes that I work with a few guys who are they're trying to do what I do, essentially, right? Which I've got no problem with. I mean, you've changed your life, mate, so have a slightly
different... We have burst tons of one-year no-beer.
I'm like, mate, businesses. Just listen, if you try and copy me, someone will call you a cunt. So just do your own version of it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, Paul, I've only got like 1,000 followers. And one of them was like, I've got 100 followers. I'm like, mate, there's 100 people in this room.
Yeah.
Look
Think
at
about
the,
that.
Is there loads of people here? Aye. Well, that's how many followers you got.
Yeah.
The size of this room. And they're like, oh, actually, yeah.
Just
do you know what I mean?
Keep going. Tony Robbins says it, I think, the best. He says, you know, everyone can try and copy me, but good luck catching up with me, because the time you get to here, I'm going to be 6 years ahead.
Do you know what? People laugh about Robbins. Like, they're like, oh, Paul, you're building a business that you can't sell because it's all about you. I'm like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Tony Robbins does that, and he lives in a castle on his own fucking island.
Yeah.
He's doing all right.
Yeah. No, and I think just keep going. So it's not just business coaching.
No. Yeah. Okay. So it's weird because I've got that background in business coaching. A lot of people think that's what I do, and then a lot of people who've followed me since I would say 2017, 2018 think I only do the mindset stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but what I teach is what we coach on is how to upgrade your thinking. So how to think at a higher level. How to master your emotions and how to take back control of your life. That's it, really.
Amazing.
I hate calling it mindset coaching because it sounds fucking shit.
Yeah.
What I hate even more is when people call it life coaching.
Yeah.
Because I just get put into that fucking live, laugh, love category.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, at Nick James' event, right, this is bad, this. Nick said, can you come in and speak and talk about what your experiences are, right? Let's call it how to become unfuckwithable, right? So that gets rid of the snowflake straight away. They're not going to come to that talk. And I did that. So part of my wife's way of feeling in control, because she's puking up before I speak, and I'm like, I'm not nervous, why are you? Do you know what I mean? I'm excited about going on. So she gets nervous because she's not sure what I'm going to say,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So her way of feeling in control is to make me rehearse it, which is actually incredible because it means I can go on and it's memorable.
Mm.
People really remember it. That's why I keep, even though I offend people, I get invited back because it's like, I feel like a pro. Whereas me, if it was just left to me, I'd blag it a little bit.
Yeah,
I'd blag it a little bit. She's got, say that a bit again, or don't say that. So anyway, I've got this slide up and I'm like, you guys are talking about living, laughing and loving, and I'm talking about drinking, sniffing and wanking. And she said, take that out. Right? Take that out. I mean, I have a producer as well, right? He's a mind reader. So he's done a lot of shows. He helps me basically turn a keynote into a show.
Mm.
Because I said, you know, the theatre show, I couldn't just turn up and do a keynote. But now I've taken what I've learned from that, and now I'm doing what I do in a show in keynotes, which no one does. And people are like, what the fuck's this? And it's got me loads of gigs on the back of it. So anyway, I did that. I said, don't say that. So I'm in Nick James's event. I've left the slide in, right? I've left the slide in.
You know what you see? My wife's at the back. Someone says you don't do
that. Oh, mate, I'm so bad. My wife's at the back of the room, and the slide comes on, and I can only see her face, and she's going like that. She's going like that. And I didn't just say it. I went, you're talking about living, laughing and loving. I'm talking about drinking, sniffing and wanking. And I do that. And she's like, did you just fucking do that? So anyway, that was about life coaching. But that's the truth, right? Like, you could essentially, I am a life coach, but I'm not the traditional live, laugh, love, universal. I did
Tough
James Haskell's podcast. A little bit.
I love that.
A little bit.
Loved
but
it.
But I did a podcast with James Haskell, and he said, why is what you're doing working? Mm. And I said, because it's fucking practical.
Yeah.
It's not theory.
Yeah.
Theory doesn't cover the cost of admission or transformation. Do you know what I mean? It's action. And the way I deliver it is practical. And it, I suppose it's for, when I worked with HarperCollins last year, they're like, Paul, your stuff's for northern blokes. I'm like, well, it is. But everyone that comes in seems to like it because
I think they've missed the point. I think you could scratch the northern bit, and I think you've smashed it.
Yeah.
You know, it blokes 100%.
And because it's practical.
The other thing, what you said about, oh, I say this and I clear the room of the snowflakes. Well, the moment the northern bloke, right, or the hard man comes into the room, the moment there's even a few softies, they're gone, right?
Yeah, I know what
this is. So you have to be very niched into that.
And it's weird, you know, I don't do it on purpose.
Yeah.
I do it. If I think about back to 2014, I was still trying to be a bit professional and a bit prim and proper. And I don't do it on purpose. I'm just like, if you don't like that, me on the stage saying that,
yeah,
when we meet in person, I want to work with people who I could be mates with. And if you're offended by that, we'll never be mates.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? If you're offended by me saying that, because that's nothing that.
Yeah.
Drinking, sniffing and wank, and then I'd stop putting, if we're in person, I'm going to put detail on it. I'm going to start talking about foreskin and helmets and scrotums and that. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to start colouring it in. So if you're offended by that, we're not going to be friends. Because here's the thing. People talk about authenticity all the time. Right? I fucking hate that word. It's disgusting. But I learned that authenticity is just the absence of inauthenticity. And inauthenticity is just, I'm not going to cover up my insecurities.
Yeah.
Because what I found from being fairly popular online is that people will be very fast to point those insecurities out.
100%.
So I'm just going to fucking own them. Yeah. Same with, do you know what I mean? Same with my imperfections.
Yeah.
I'm owning them. And for me talking about that stuff is just me. Yeah. I have a bit in my keynote that I did Expert Empires. Like, one of you is just thinking, this comes way too confident. One of you is thinking his accent's ridiculous. Two of you, at least, are thinking, I talk too fast. Two of you are thinking, why is he not standing still? And or you're all thinking something about us, so I'm just going to own it. I'm all of them things. Yeah. You think I'm too confident? I probably am. You think I swear too much? I definitely do. And I had to do that in Puerto Rico because no one was there to see me.
Right.
The only person that knew who I was the guy that booked me. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
They're all there to see Gary Vee. Who got a 300 grand keynote, by the way.
Wow.
Which blows me head off. Oh. All there to see Gary Vee. None of them are there to see me. And I'm like, English people can't even understand what I'm saying. Never mind American people who don't know who I am. So I just said, you probably don't know who I am. You're here to see Gary Vee. So I'm going to talk really slow. And I'm going to swear a lot. I'd rather do that than not have to think, is what I'm going to say upset should people? Do you know what I mean? It's like, do you know what I mean? And that means the people that come into my program, I feel like I'm coaching my mates.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I never feel like, oh, I have to turn my phone off so they don't message me when I go to an event. I'm not desperate to get away. Do you know what I mean? It means that everything that I do now can be fun. As well as serious. I'm serious about getting results. But it means that I can laugh me dick off all day, every day. Yeah. And the people that are laughing with me and at me are fun to be around. And that is it. So we're not just getting people that are getting amazing results and I feel blessed them. I'm getting people that I love fucking working with as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm filtering them out. Not even, and like amazing. I say, it's not on purpose.
Yeah.
I don't directly go out to offend people. I actually say things in the way that I would like them said to me.
Yeah.
And I joke about things that I find funny.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? I've never known anyone like me for laughing at their own jokes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But I think this is great because the inspiration to other people is there. Go out, be yourself, create a crew of people around you like you.
People say I don't feel like I'm being myself until I've had a drink.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What?
That's my favorite.
I don't feel like I'm being myself without a drink. I'm like, but you're not yourself then because you're under the influence of fucking, what's it, ethanol?
Exactly. So I think we could carry on chatting for a lot longer. I think we could cover so much stuff. I'm confident that you're going to have more stuff to get onto now, and I've got to drive back up to Scotland. But before one thing we mentioned, I just want to circle back onto talking about circles
to the anal,
and it's something that we have in common. Now we've got a few things in common, but
I'm going to have a guess, right?
Yeah,
you got to say what's one or two. Is it that you've had Botox in your arsehole?
Nope.
Is it that you've got two arseholes?
No.
Is it that the first time you had anal sex, there was sweet corn on your penis?
No, I've never had anal sex.
I was saying this morning, right? I was saying to the lads this morning, I'm like, why would you even think that would be... Why would you put that in the place where poop comes out of?
What I was going to say is, just moving back onto the topic.
I'm surprised you haven't asked a question about number one and number two.
Is that on James Haskell's podcast, you mentioned that you've had an anal fissure.
That's what it was. That's why I had the Botox.
Exactly. But so I shared this ailment with you. And I listened to it and I heard that you were doing this remedial stuff. I do a lot of cycling, do the 312 and everything else. Mm-hmm. And that is what really made it significantly an issue. And the pain is unbelievable. It was horrendous. For 3 months, I was unable to sit down.
Nah. And it's how debilitating is it?
So debilitating. I just want to kill people.
It's horrendous. Because you feel fine when you wake up.
So and then I had the surgery.
So what was the surgery did you have?
Well, they go in and they cut it a bit to relax it.
Oh, okay.
But
I got the Botox in.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's it. I'm done now. It was instant
Do you
relief.
Know what? Do you know what, mate? Do you know what's mad? Sometimes I can feel it coming back.
Mm. And that's why I heard that.
Yeah. They told me when you feel it coming back, take stool softeners.
Yeah.
But it comes back when I'm dehydrated.
Yeah.
When I'm not getting enough water in.
Oh, so it's a good warner.
A really good warning. It happens usually in the summer when I'm on holiday.
Right.
Because you're sweating more.
And you're like,
I can feel it coming. It's a nice reminder. It's what I like about the body. It never lies.
Yeah. Well, all I wanted to say was, the surgery was painless. It was easy. And now I'm no more problems.
Well, we've ended. We started the podcast talking about an arsehole.
Yep, we did.
And we've ended the podcast talking about two arseholes.
Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. Hey,
thank you so much. I've had a blast.
Congratulations on your journey. And
thank you so much.
Amazing work you're doing. And I am hopeful that we'll do some more stuff together.
I love it, brother. So, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the 1 Year No Beer podcast, where our mission is to share and tell the stories of the everyday heroes who are taking the steps to make a meaningful impact by changing their relationship with alcohol. If you want to join our community and find out more about the variety of benefits that you can enjoy by becoming part of our 80,000 plus members within our alcohol-free movement, then click the link in the show notes below.